Chapter 43. Sally indicated right, slowed, and turned. She checked in her rear-view mirror to confirm that Eric was following her, and then started looking for a place to park. She found a space and reversed into it. Eric waited behind her, then drove by and found a spot to park the Explorer further down the street. Sally switched off the VW's engine. She looked down at the carbine. There was no way she could carry it on the pavement. There were three-story white stucco terraces either side, most of which had been converted into flats and bedsits, and there were hundreds of windows overlooking the street. She shrugged off her fleece and wrapped it around the gun. She wrinkled her nose. It still looked like a weapon, just one that had been covered with a jacket. She got out of the VW and locked it, then fished the envelope for the flat out of her bag. She took the keys from the envelope and walked along the pavement to the Explorer, where Eric was already opening the rear door for Tim. Tim had tucked the Glock into his belt, and he fastened his jacket as he got out.
"We need something to cover the cuffs," said Eric.
Mendoza took off his jacket and dropped it over the cuffs, binding Flores's wrists. Sally kept her gun pressed against her side, hoping it wasn't too conspicuous. She scanned the houses nearby, and while many had lights on inside, no one appeared to be paying them any attention.
"Where do we go?"
asked Eric, as Tim helped Flores out of the Explorer. Sally nodded at the building behind them.
"First floor."
"So there's access from the garden behind?" Sally shook her head.
"English first floor. You call it second floor, right?"
"Because it is. The bottom floor is obviously the first floor, so the one above it is the second." Sally laughed.
"Yeah, well, we call it the first. And no, there's no access from the back. The only way in is through the front door and up the stairs."
Eric nodded.
"Let's go."
Butler locked up the car as Sally took Eric to the front door. Tim and Mendoza followed, either side of Flores, who was looking around anxiously.
"This is not good,"
muttered Flores.
"You should have your guns out."
"This is England, not Mexico," said Eric. "You can't wave guns around here."
"The men who attacked us didn't seem to have a problem," said Flores.
"Shut the fuck up, Flores," snarled Eric. "We're doing this to save your fucking life."
"No," said Flores. "You're doing this because you want to take down the cartel, and you need me to help you do that."
"Either way, Martinez's men are out to fill you full of lead, so you need to stop bitching."
An engine revved behind them, and they all turned to look. It was a Deliveroo driver on a motorbike. He went by and parked further down the road. Sally unlocked the main door and pushed it open. There was a time delay light switch to the right, and she pressed it. The hallway was flooded with light. There was a line of mailboxes and two doors leading left and right to the ground floor flats. Sally led the way up the stairs, and Eric followed her. She unlocked the door to the flat and pushed it open. Eric pulled his Glock from an underarm holster and went in first. Sally switched the light on for him. The burglar alarm began to buzz. Eric went along the hallway, checking the rooms, as Sally tapped in the 4-digit number to silence the alarm. Mendoza and Tim brought Flores into the flat, and Butler brought up the rear. He closed the door and flicked a bolt across. Eric came out of the main bedroom.
"All clear," he said.
He pointed at the living room.
"Sam, pull the blind shut, will you?"
Butler nodded and headed into the room.
"Is there anything to eat?" asked Flores.
"Not really," said Sally.
"The flat isn't being used at the moment. There might be something in the freezer."
"What about coffee?"
"Coffee I can do, but it'll have to be black."
"You're not his maid, Sally," said Eric. "I'm happy to make coffee," she said. She unwrapped the carbine.
"What do I do with this?"
"Keep it close by," said Eric. "On second thoughts, let me have a look."
He took it from her and examined it.
"It's an HK, Heckler & Koch. I've not seen this model before."
Butler switched on the sitting room lights and came back into the hall. Eric handed him the gun.
"Sam's the gun nut," he said. "What do you think, Sam?"
Butler hefted the weapon in his right hand and nodded his approval.
"Nice piece of kit," he said. HK416, based very much on our own Colt M4 carbine, but it's a lot more reliable. Delta and the Navy SEALs use them. This is the shorter version with a 10-inch barrel, more than 700 rounds a minute, effective up to 400 yards pretty much. I've never seen them with suppressors, so that's a first.
He gave it back to Eric. So the question has to be asked, where did they get guns like this? Asked Eric. He turned to look at Tim. Have you heard about weapons like this being available in London? It's not my field, said Tim. We normally come across handguns or the occasional Ingram or Uzi. That's more like something a soldier would use. Eric then turned to look at Mendoza.
Louis, take Flores to the bedroom at the back of the apartment. Draw the curtains.
Flores raised his arms.
Can you take the cuffs off? They're cutting into me.
Mendoza took his jacket and examined the man's wrists.
They look okay to me. I'm in fucking pain, said Flores.
We'll take them off when we're on the plane, said Eric. Get him out of my sight, Louis. Mendoza grabbed Flores by the arm and frog-marched him to the bedroom, the back of the property. Let's talk, said Eric, taking them into the sitting room. There were two sofas at right angles to each other, with a wooden chest used as a coffee table between them. Eric dropped down on one of the sofas, still holding the gun, and Butler took the other sofa. There was an armchair by a big screen television, and Tim sat there while Sally dropped down onto a large leather pouf. Eric held up the gun. This is Special Forces kit, no question, he said. Plus, they had Kevlar helmets and jackets. We weren't attacked by gangsters. They were professionals. If I hadn't been in the other bedroom when the first two came upstairs, they'd have got me as well. And if Sally hadn't taken care of the two at the back of the house, well, we probably wouldn't be sitting here now. And presumably, they were working for the cartel, said Sally. No question of it, said Eric. Have you heard of Carlos Martinez?
Only what Ian Hadley told us, said Sally.
A nasty piece of work who tortures and kills his competitors.
He's the worst of the worst, and he's not going to give up until Flores is dead. He'll keep sending killers until he succeeds, or until we have Flores in custody in the States. Even then, and even if we bury Martinez in a supermax somewhere, Flores is going to be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life.
He'll definitely testify against his boss.
He doesn't have any choice, said Eric. Did your boss tell you how they caught him?
He was caught on tape, right? Said Sally.
Eric laughed.
You couldn't make it up what happened.
Your people were about to move against a London drugs gang that they'd been investigating for months. As part of that operation, they had bugged several of the places that the gang used, including a couple of restaurants and a nightclub. On the night they were about to bust the gang, they met with Flores. They had dinner in one of the restaurants that MI5 had bugged, but the conversation was pretty guarded, as you'd expect. Then they moved onto the nightclub. Several bottles of Cristal and many lines of cocaine later, their tongues loosened and they started swapping war stories. The London boys were keen to impress Flores, so they opened up about the cannabis they were bringing in from North Africa and the heroin they were buying from Afghanistan. Flores then starts to get all competitive and tells them about the cocaine and cannabis his guys are moving across the Mexican border and how the cartel pays off border guards to let their shipments through. Then he started telling them how they deal with their competition, especially the Colombians. That's when it got really interesting. He detailed three murders that he had personally carried out. He was actually charged with one of those murders, but got off. Flores said it was because they had bribed the judge and threatened members of the jury.
He defies belief that he would open up like that, said Tim.
It was partly the booze and the drugs talking, said Eric. But Flores was trying to show them how powerful the cartel was and how the cartel could help them expand in the UK and Europe. That's when he started to big up Carlos Martinez. He told them far more than he should have done about the guy, about killings Martinez had carried out himself, his connections with Mexican politicians,
about the judges in Mexico and the states that he pays bribes to, and every word was captured on tape. Martinez must have gone apoplectic when he heard what Flores had said. If nothing else, he'd have ordered his death because of his stupidity alone. "When was this?" asked Sally. "3 nights ago." "Haven't you wondered how Martin has found out so quickly?" Eric frowned. "We assumed that one of his people realized what happened and called it in. Doesn't it seem more likely that someone within MI5 is on his payroll?" Eric rubbed his chin. "That's a definite possibility. Probably the same person who ordered a check on my phone this morning. And I'm guessing that's who had Hadley followed. But if it's someone within MI5, wouldn't they have known about the safe house?" Sally shook her head. "Not necessarily. The details of the safe houses are not widely known. It's need to know, mostly. Do you have any thoughts on who the inside man might be?" "Initially, I thought it was Ian Hadley, but he definitely knew about the Hampstead house and almost certainly would have been told that it was in use. If he had told the cartel what he knew, there would be no point to the attack on the Wimbledon house. No one else comes to mind?" She shook her head. "Sorry. But you're probably right. The inside man heard about Flores being arrested and told Martinez. Martinez sent in his own men." "Would he have that sort of manpower in England? The cartel has people all over the world. But he could have flown a team over from the States. He's got a load of former Special Forces people on his payroll. But he might well already have a crew in place here in anticipation of problems down the line." Sally nodded thoughtfully. "Same with getting people on the payroll at MI5 and with the cops, maybe. It would make sense to have them in place before making any serious moves here, right?" "Exactly. So he could well have someone working for him at a very senior level within MI5. That's a definite possibility. One of the things Flores told the London guys was that the cartel had one of the top DEA agents in Dallas on the payroll. There's always someone who will either accept the money or bow to the pressure. Silver or lead was the choice that Escobar gave people. You take his money or you get a bullet. The Mexicans follow a similar philosophy. Is it possible it could be someone at Hadley's level or above? Someone who was near the top, but who wouldn't know the location of the safe house in Hampstead?" "It's possible," said Sally. "But presumably allowing you to use the house must have been cleared at a very senior level. The more I think about it, the more it looks like their MI5 source, if they have one, is quite junior. Someone who knew the location of the footy house in Wimbledon, and someone able to get my phone tracked, but not at a high enough level to know where Flores was being held or what you planned to do with him." She ran her hands through her hair. "I just wish I knew who it was." "You and me both," said Eric. He looked around the room. "I'm hungry," he said. "Is anyone else hungry?"
"You know what I could eat," said Butler.
Eric grinned.
"Pizza?" "Damn right."
He looked over at Sally.
"Can we get pizzas delivered?"
"Sure. There's one close by. I can go and pick up a couple."
"I'd prefer we all stay inside," said Eric. "But a delivery works for me. I want extra pineapple on mine."
Tim laughed, and Eric frowned at him.
"What?"
"What is this with guys wanting fruit on their pizzas?" said Sally.
"Tomatoes are fruits, and everyone has tomato on their pizza," said Eric.
"That's different. Tomatoes aren't really fruits."
"Tomatoes are totally fruits," said Eric. "Anything with the seed on the inside is a fruit."
"But pineapples are so sweet. Why would you want something sweet on a pizza?"
"Because it tastes good,"
said Eric and Tim at exactly the same time, and they both laughed. Eric's mobile phone buzzed, and he checked it. He put the phone away as Sally walked back into the room.
"The jet has just left Dallas," he said. "Flight time of about 10 hours, so ETA at RAF Northolt is 9 a.m.
"The plan is to stay here until when?" asked Sally.
"How long do you think to get there?"
"Early morning, half an hour, 45 minutes maybe. Most of the traffic will be coming the other way."
"So we can leave at about 8, said Eric.
Give us a chance to get a few hours' sleep. Why not leave now and wait overnight at the airport? Asked Tim.
My bosses vetoed that, said Eric. They don't want us drawing attention to Flores. We stay away until the plane is refueled and ready to go. Then we go straight onto the airport and away. This isn't exactly a rendition flight, but the U.S. came into so much shit for its Guantanamo flights that they've been treading on eggshells ever since.
He looked over at Sally.
So, pizza, yeah?
With extra pineapple.
She mimed using her fingers to make herself sick as she headed for the kitchen.